God dag, hail oxal, etc. My name is Erik Storsund. I'm a Norwegian Old Norse philologist, more or less voluntarily based in the US, and you're listening to the Brute Norse Podcast, a podcast all about celebrating the menial and simple, as well as the esoteric Scandinavian bullshit, and tracing the strange and weird legacy of ancient Scandinavia. I like to call it walking backwards into the future. And this product is an extension of a wider analytical concept that I like to call Scandi Futurism, which, though it may seem paradoxical, is less about the future and more about the past in the now, all in the interest of producing a more living and radical approach to cultural heritage. We talk about a lot of weird and some might say problematic stuff on this podcast, and my alibi has always been that it's a methodological and philosophical obligation of Scandi Futurism to have radical acceptance towards the past. But it also cannot be swept under the rug that I am a severely morbid person who takes a lot of delight in these fucked up subjects. So Brute Norse is kind of doomed, for better or worse, to focus in on the stranger aspects of this heritage. So why not, I suppose? I would seem to be the right person for the job. And that means I have to drop some disclaimers, I guess. Disclaimers are nothing new in this world. Everybody's fucking eager to tell you exactly where they stand on this or that topic, whether or not that has anything to do with the subject matter at hand, which is the cultural heritage of Scandinavia and its archaeology and whatever fucking outlier connects to either of them. So my disclaimer, as always, will be a little bit different, and more sort of a reality check to the Anglophone world about how people actually think about this back home. I think that this strong urge to place yourself on an ideological landscape and justify why you're talking about something in regards to ancient Scandinavia is almost always a symptom of somebody not really having that much connection to the subject matter to begin with. And by saying that, I don't mean to devalue any outsider perspectives. I'm just saying that a more observational perspective on history is more the mainstream in the countries actually affected by this stuff. Chances are, if you grew up in the Nordic area, you're already so immersed in this that you can kind of take it for granted. But being Scandinavian in the United States, I also recognize that history over here is a lot more politicized. It's not ethnic window dressing like it is in Scandinavia. There seems to be a greater tendency in the Anglophone world specifically to consider references to be endorsements. So I'm just putting it out there that this goes completely out the window when you're listening to Brute Norse. I do my very best not to be a participant in the American discourse. I'm merely an alien ambassador. Part of the idea with Scandi Futurism is also to offer a window into the everyday perceptions and experiences of the past that Scandinavians have access to that otherwise would have been hidden behind cultural codes and language barriers. In that way, you might even consider it the counter-response to, let's call it the cultural imperialism that seems to be baked into the homogenizing principle of industrial internet age modernity. And in that respect, a form of ethnocultural self-advocacy that also invites, you know, you guys, the international audience, Scandinavians and non-Scandinavians alike, to participate in this celebration and a curious inquiry into the often strange and fantastic and sometimes disturbing Scandinavian past. So of course, yeah, what I'm trying to say is, regardless of my ethno-particularist snobbish point of view, we're all in the same boat, basically. And what I'm trying to do here can be transposed to just about any cultural context whatsoever. So the idea here with this episode was to do something a little simpler, that does not take a lot of time, and without the damn endless tangents. We're not even 5 minutes into the episode, and that goal is already out the window. I don't have a lot of time to make so-called content these days, so I'm trying to do something different. Maybe narrow things down a little bit and just rant about a specific topic for maybe 20 minutes, instead of vanishing for months on end as I tunnel vision my way into a two-hour audio essay or something like that. And then, of course, I want to otherwise keep chugging along with my printed matter on Trollcat Press. Sorry, the new producer has a lot of complaints. Today I hope to rock your world with startling new old discoveries pertaining to the origin of the species, specifically in the deep Norwegian fjords. Turns out that the numbskulls bragging on Facebook about their 5% Scandinavian 23andMe results were right to do it all along, because it turns out that all people on the planet are actually Scandinavian. Anyway, that's quite enough spoilers for now. Suffice to say, this is based on a very strange rabbit hole that I fell in recently, so So bear with me, we're going to go through things quite chronologically. Anyway, this is episode 48, Men Are From Mars via West Norway. This is an irrelevant and maybe not even fun fact, but you know that the Brute Norse podcast theme song is actually a Beherit cover that I recorded for my black metal band when I was like 19 years old. Produced it at probably 3 in the morning in my student flat in Bergen way back when. And it's a cover of Summerlands by Beherit, actually. It was going to be on the B-side of... Oh, here's... Maybe you can...
Want me to take him?
Yeah, please. Anyway, and by the way, shout out to Marco Fago Runic, who was totally on board with the idea that the A-side should be pure black metal and the B-side should just be antiquarian house music or whatever we should call it. But who cares? It never happened. I just wish I was in Osaka right now getting ready for the Hospital Records / Nuclear War Fest to see frickin' Beherit live. Before I get into the meat of things, I would like to introduce you to a man who went by the name of N.O. Foss. And in the interest of painting a somewhat clearer picture of the guy, insofar that is possible, I'm going to present the paper trail surrounding his existence somewhat more or less chronologically. There are probably more sources that could tell us more about his identity, his ideas, and so on, but these are the ones that I have been able to acquire anyway. So first of all, let's talk about his name. Depending on the source, he's referred to as N. Orlando Foss, or Nelson Orlando Foss, or Nils Olav Foss, which seems to be his actual name. But for the most part, he simply goes by his first two initials and then his last name, N.O. Foss. He probably assumed the name Nelson Orlando when he migrated to South Dakota sometime in the 1800s, where he is supposed to have worked as an editor, before ultimately moving back to Norway, where he and his American wife began to offer English classes to seafarers as well as would-be migrants to the Americas, printing ads below the obituaries and the newspaper Bergen Aftenblad in the late 1890s. You see, like some of my own ancestors, Mr. Foss was one of those Norwegians who moved to the New World, figured out it just wasn't for them, and then returned to the old country for whatever reason. Information about his life abroad are scarce and details are vague. As I said, he was supposedly an editor, and it's alleged that he was shot with a revolver. That same account claims that he walked around with a bullet embedded in his hand for all of his remaining days. The couple, N.O. Foss and E.E. Foss, settled in Vadheim on the northern bank of the Sognefjord in West Norway. This may or may not have been where him and his family was actually from, and seems to be the main location of our saga. Today, Vadheim is a quaint village of 238 people. To keep on tracing N.O. Foss and his life through the only sources we can, we're going to keep following the paper trail as it is from really the only source we have, which are newspaper clippings. In this regard, a lot of things seems to have happened in the year 1902 for Mr. Foss. He published a list of named local students who had graduated from his English course in a local newspaper. Later in the same year, he writes a letter to the same newspaper protesting that he has been implicated as the author behind a controversial article about the local choir. As far as I can tell, this was about some kind of incident where one specific singer sang so badly that it ruined the concert for all in attendance, to the point where members of the audience felt physically unwell. This seems to have sparked a sort of back and forth, and Mr. Foss gets involved by denying his involvement, which is, I know, fair enough. I don't have any specific reason to think that he was involved or wrote the article, so we're moving on. Meanwhile, at some point before all of this, a ship from my hometown of Haugesund sets out from England. It's bound for Denmark, but sinks in the North Sea. Thankfully, not before the captain writes a message in a bottle, which he then tosses into the raging waters of the sea. It said, February 26, 1902. The bark Rask of Haugesund loaded with coal from Newcastle to Frederikshavn. The vessel is sinking and the lifeboats are smashed. No hope of survival. Signed, Captain P. Jespersen. Fast forward to May, and who comes across the captain's final words but the protagonist of our story, who supposedly found us floating around in the Sognefjord off of Vadheim? At this point, our protagonist is referred to as Teacher N.O. Foss of the Vadheim Technical Language School, which I think is just run out of his own house. I don't think there are any other teachers. He apparently found the bottle just dipping around in the ocean 3 kilometers from his house, and we have testimonies in the papers from other people who claim to have read the note, and it seems to be written with a pencil on a page that's been ripped out of a pocketbook. So they attest to the existence of the note at the very least. We don't necessarily know much more than that. There also seems to have existed a ship that fits that description at some point. And whether or not it sank, I couldn't find anything on that. But maybe it's true. I don't know. Let's just say that my sixth sense is tingling because, Foss, as it turns out, was kind of unhinged, and I don't have a lot of faith in him as a reliable narrator. But by all means, that might not be the case here. In 1908, he opened a general store, and this seems to have been his main gig for a while also running a cafe on the premises. In 1909, he writes a magazine entry to a debate about A or I suffixes in the Nynorsk, or New Norwegian, spelling convention. But the editor just remarks that he added nothing that hadn't already been said to the debate, so they refrained from printing his contribution. A few years go by, and in 1912, someone writes an anonymous article for the local newspaper that Foss usually puts his ads in, complaining about the general state of affairs in the area, and Vadheim specifically, and he particularly singles out Foss's cafe and general store as a place where young louts, horse traders, and layabouts waste their days, playing cards and getting drunk behind the general store, which the anonymous writer refers to as Mimir's Well, which is a nice Norse mythology reference, though it's not clear if this is what the locals call it, or if this is some kind of, like, Puritan Christian kind of disparaging remark. It's also frequented by booze-thirsty milkmaids who go and sully their dignity, and he claims that the floor is caked with spent chewing tobacco and littered with trash. It is not clear how or if Foss ever responded to this. By 1913, things are clearly not going great for Foss. He writes the following announcement to a Bergen-based newspaper. To avoid bankruptcy, I am selling, for cash, the following wares significantly below wholesale price. Work trousers, Sunday trousers, undershirts, tourist shirts, work shirts, suits, work shoes, church shoes, ink, paper, knives, and it goes on and on and on. He's selling a lot of stuff. For half price, he's offering cowbells, horse bells, sheep bells, a piano, Christmas cards, snacks, and apples by the barrel. He then goes on to say that these are all items that crafty agents within the trade organization have tricked him into taking into his shop. The newspaper on their end seemed to take these allegations a little less seriously. On July 10th, 1914, he puts this in the paper. Quote, Foss Café in Vadheim has been moved, so friends and acquaintances must not go ashore unless they are ready to walk a stone's throw into the surf where the establishment currently lies. Signed, N.O. Foss. I have no fucking clue what the hell that means. Does his shop no longer exist? Did it fall into the fjord? Did he dump his unwanted merchandise on the beach? Whatever lurks in the background here, his business ventures seem to have continued because in 1916, he prints a job listing for coopers to make barrels for him. So I take it the general store continued. And from 1919, I found another advertisement showing he was still offering English courses, as well as French and German. It's not entirely clear if he offered this continuously, or if he returned to this vocation because he fell on bad times. On February 24th, 1921, another ad is printed. This time for a public lecture in Vadheim's youth club, where N.O. Foss will provide new information about the arrival of the first humans to Earth from Mars. From Mars. Pay attention here, because this would appear to be the great watershed moment. But it really takes off in 1922, when he publishes another string of ads, first in the local newspaper, and then a couple of others, but this time for some kind of treatise he's been working on behind the scenes. That might have been the last time he spent money on ad space, because it went, you know, whatever the 1920s version of viral is. A whole bunch of newspapers from across the country quickly took note and promptly printed the ads themselves as curiosity pieces, only this time with ironic custom headlines such as "The Solution to the World's Problems" and "Good to Know." The most prominent ad went like this, quote, "We, the people of this earth, are a side stream of an infinite and from eternity gushing flood of people, flowing for all eternity without end. People and animals are transplanted from one planet to the other, as the planets through the course of millions of years end up touching each other. You'll receive an inquiry in the mail about how the planet Mars put our first ancestors on our planet, as well as the original discovery of America, when you send 1 kroner to the explorer N.O. Foss in Vadheim." One newspaper simply retorted something to the effect of,
"I'd buy that for $1.
The newspaper Bergens Tidende has a long tradition of thoughtful and witty commentary, and in regards to the matter of the past collision of Mars with Earth, they had this to say. "For thousands of years, mankind has pondered the riddles of existence, the origins of life, and the potentials and limitations of our awareness. We have conquered lands that we are now most familiar with, and yet no explorer has been able to penetrate the atmosphere in such an errand. Still, we know a little bit about the universe. We've had a Galilei, a Kepler, a Newton, and now we have Einstein. But how many have heard of N.O. Foss in Vadheim? Well, now we finally know who to turn to for information." The fact that Orlando Foss refers to himself as an explorer at this point is a favorite hang-up of some of these editors. Now, despite the reprints in various regional newspapers, I've not been able to find any response from Foss himself, and it doesn't really look like he posted any more ads for this treatise. Later, in the fall of 1922, however, the newspaper Den 17. Mai published a somewhat longer article by someone who had actually bothered to order and read his treatise. And boy, am I glad that they did, because so far I have not been able to source the original text. I don't have a title for it, I don't know how long it was. And this seems to be the only available account that provides a summary of the contents, so this is actually indispensable information. And this article highlights 3 particular points that are present in the treatise. One is that mankind originally came to Earth during an ancient collision with Mars, that the theologian Christopher Jansson, otherwise known for introducing the Christian theology of Unitarianism to Norway, was in fact murdered to conceal this fact, and that the now non-existent Church of St. Thomas on Filefjell, higher up in the Norwegian mountains, was not a medieval stave church, but a stone construction built by the Norse god Tyr. After 50 years of research, Nelson Orlando Foss, or Nils Orlando Foss, or Nils Olav Foss, or whatever you want to call him, can prove that Darwin was a fool for thinking that mankind descended from monkeys. And if it weren't for the dogmas of half-witted scholars, his own findings would have affected our worldview more profoundly than Einstein's theory of relativity ever could. To nobody's surprise, the impact happened in Norway, specifically the area around Sogn where Foss lived. But he says that it's also possible that Mars might have grazed Iceland and Greenland. This is clear because many of the tallest mountains in the world are pointy, but the Norwegian mountains often form plateaus because their summits were broken off. Differences in gravitational pull between Earth and Mars were such that animals and people alike were kind of pulled down to Earth, but this was somewhat buffered by the gravitational forces of Mars, and therefore people landed relatively gently with a drop certainly no more than 20 meters, he says. If you're curious about what the source material for all of this is, you can read about all of that in the Eddas, he says, where all of this is apparently laid out, because this is all evident in the core texts of Norse mythology, where it is also attested that cows and dogs and sheep and all sorts of other animals fell from the skies along with the Martians. And the primordial giant Ymir in Norse mythology was of course the chief of the initial earthly population. Then when he died, society fell into a sort of civil war, where the god Heimdallr, Loki, and Tyr constituted the heads of each respective faction vying for world domination, or at least domination of the fjords where all of this is happening. Heimdall was killed, Tyr took charge of the Jotnar, and Loki became a refugee among the Æsir, whom, what we would call the Norse gods. So the Jotnar, can be considered something like the Norse anti-gods, to us. You know, I'm not talking about Foss's interpretation here. But they're usually called giants in modern conversation, though they aren't really giants as such. It's kind of an unfortunate term. But for sake of simplicity, we're going to call them giants anyway, so people can, you know, understand what the fuck is going on. Anyway, the giants were among the original inhabitants of Mars, as I already said, but on Earth they lived in the inner parts of the Sognefjord in West Norway. As mentioned, the lost stave church of St. Thomas up in the middle of fucking nowhere was built by the god Tyr, but it was made out of stone. It was not a wooden stave church, according to Foss. Well, you see, it wasn't originally a stave church, says Foss, but a stone beacon that was built by the giants to have a place to rally at once a year. And all of this only came to an abrupt end because the Jews came and perverted the monument and turned it into St. Thomas's church. Because, of course, what's more Jewish? What would Judaism as a religion be without its profound respect and devotion for the English Catholic St. Thomas Becket? And if you're following so far, they also used this as a venue to preach the lie and the falsehood that civilization originated in the barren deserts of Mesopotamia, of course, to obfuscate the reality of humanity's glorious extraterrestrial and, more importantly, Norwegian past by saying that ancient man had neither shoes nor clothes nor food and drink or stuff like that, and they were in the presence of devils and brother killers, and it's not really easy to understand what Foss is saying in the quotes attributed to the text itself. Anyway, the first Norwegian Unitarian priest, as I mentioned, Christopher Jansson, knew about all of this, and he had the balls to say it at a Christian summit at the old St. Thomas Church site in front of, I don't know, other delegates of the Church of Norway or something. And by saying this out loud, the prophet, Christopher Jansson, was exiled and then most probably murdered when he died in 1917. Murdered because he knew that all people actually came from Norway and that this would be revealed for all people in the future. Foss says that, according to scientists, this would make him one of the 10 million people across the world that is estimated to have been assassinated because they refuted the false mainstream narratives, as well as for advocating for Norway's rights to be acknowledged rightfully as the cradle of the human race on planet Earth. Bent as they are on destroying Norway's reputation, you might be worried about these Jewish machinations, but Foss says that we can actually take it easy. He assures us that for every martyr that is killed or tortured by these devils in human disguise, no less than a legion of truth seekers will stand up to compensate. Now, returning to the topic of the primordial races here, I did say that you had the giants and then you had the Æsir, the gods, even though Foss confusingly kind of like splits the deities into these different camps. So the Æsir, unlike the giants who are in the inner fjords, they landed in the mountains between Sogn and the district of Sunnfjord, a little bit to the north and a little west. And this is evident from the fact that there is a farm called Æse in Sogn, where they lived. So the gods or kings that are included in the Æsir branch of the Martians include Odin and Baldur. And Baldur built Baldurshagen by Lake Ganger. We really don't have time to get into the details about that, but that's a different rabbit hole. Confusingly, there is also a third race of Martians that is referred to as Asana by Foss, and there's really no good way to render this in English, because in all due respect, it's the same word as Æsir. It's just that he doesn't seem to recognize that fact, and he just made up a variant form. So let's just call these Asses to separate them from the Æsir. So there's Asses, and there's Æsir, and there's giants. And the Asses, they come from the farm of Åsheim and Åsgard. And the king of the Asses was Thor, and they were all redheads. One of them was so strong that he once threw a stone across the Sognefjord, where it stands to this day. And then, of course, there's a fourth and final race of Martians who landed in Mørkdalen in Voss. And Mørkt is actually the original name for Mars, it turns out. We're also expected to believe that the peasants in some of these areas have preserved a legend that they all actually came from the Red Planet. Foss is very impressed by this because tyrants have promoted the Jewish fable about mankind's heritage by murdering, burning, hanging, decapitating, lynching, and exiling people for saying otherwise. And yet these farmers just go say it like it's nothing. They just speak truth to power. Obviously, the Germanic weekdays carry the names of various gods and goddesses, and this has profound meaning, of course. It allows us to figure out which cultures are the most ancient, meaning, of course, Norwegians are the most ancient, as if that wasn't obvious already that mankind wandered out of the fjords. But there are residual traces in other cultures as well. The French word for Wednesday does not contain the god Odin, but he assures us that it simply means from Mars, so... So there is that, at least. Foss also lays forth a fascinating theory on the ethnogenesis of the Norwegian troll. You see, the Martians all came from different corners of their home planet and hadn't actually encountered each other before they landed on the west coast. So when they bumped into each other in the fjords, they naturally started to call each other trolls. Because, you know, what else could it be? Naturally, mankind's West Norwegian origins have always posed a problem to those seeking to promote the Jewish fable, as it were, so they came up with all sorts of clever explanations, sometimes placing the gods in the heavens, sometimes they placed them in hell, but never in their due place on the rocky slopes of the Norwegian fjords and mountains, because if they had even once admitted that they were actually our ancestors, then the entire Jewish worldview would implode and vanish overnight, and we can't let that happen, of course. You kind of get the feeling, though, that Foss might just not be aware that that there's an entire medieval tradition of euhemerism that states that the gods are literally just people, and that these people, of course, you know, are ancestors to people, you know, and this is also strange because that means that Foss just must not really have read the widely read sagas of Snorri Sturluson that basically form the core of Norway's relationship to its Norse past, specifically in his lifetime. Because this is literally what Snorri says in order to take the edge off of paganism. He flat out claims that the Norse gods were not literal gods, but ancient kings who lived in the area. So, I really don't understand what's being hidden here. But anyway, giving him the benefit of the doubt, Foss ends his treatise by assuring the reader that Mars won't crash into Earth for another few million years, which is, of course, a big relief. And apparently the treatise came with a supplement consisting of loose quotations from various sources and scholars meant to support his claims. Many of the ones that are cited in the article make no sense to me, and they might have been picked for that reason, you know, for comedic effect in the article. But, you know, they're just like, even presented as they are, they just seem taken out of context at best. Others are completely far-fetched. For example, one astronomer is quoted as being baffled by the unpredictable and apparently random and chaotic movements of the planets, which seems like a very unlikely thing for an astronomer to say. Like, is that your takeaway when you're looking up at the stars? The unpredictable movements of Orion, the North Star, or the fucking moon? Like, are the lunar phases just a cascade of confusing accidents or something? Another random professor that I guess we're supposed to recognize with a completely unspecified academic background is quoted as saying that all people on the planet will go fishing in Scandinavia when the last revolution is over. What the fuck is that supposed to imply? Why is that relevant to anything? I mean, sure, yes, visit Norway. I want everyone to visit Norway, but like, go fishing, do whatever you want. Say that that is true, like that Scandinavia, everybody will be pining for Scandinavia when world peace is achieved. What does that have to do with fucking Mars? My favorite statements are definitely the ones that deal with the Orient, though. Like, there's one vaguely cited as, quote, Chinese history, which simply says, the first Chinese came from Scandinavia in the far northwest. Citation, Chinese history. Skeptical? Well, who are you to disbelieve the history of the wise Chinese? And did you by any chance know that the Japanese descend from Norwegian pirates? On that specific note, it is a terrible shame that the article never addresses Foss's claims about the colony of Leif Erikson in Vinland, which he does, you know, allude to in some of the ads. And alas, the actual treatise just seems impossible to find. I've not even been able to recover a name for the book or pamphlet or whatever the original was. There just doesn't seem to be any documentation whatsoever about it, and I have not been able to find any listings of it online. However, I did make another startling discovery. because during my research, it turned out that Foss might have been on this track for a lot longer than I initially anticipated. First, diving into this, I assumed that these were just the kind of the final product of ideas that had been macerating in his head for maybe a couple of years before he began hinting at them in the papers. Well, an American copyright note proves otherwise, documenting that a certain Nelson Orlando Foss registered a book by the name Origins of Man as early as 1896, right before his return to Norway. And while, again, I have seen no trace whatsoever of his Norwegian screed anywhere outside of the newspapers, I did in fact manage to track down the full title of the English version, thanks to the Library of Congress. And it is Foss's Origin of Man, illustrated. Man was not formed of the dust of the earth, nor was he progenerated by apes. He came from heaven, by Nelson Orlando Foss. Published in Big Stone City, South Dakota, and Ortonville, Minnesota, by E.E. Foss, circa 1896. E.E. Foss, by the way, was his wife. As far as I can tell at the moment, N.O. Foss did not continue putting ads in the papers. Maybe he was subjected to some kind of local ridicule, and maybe that prompted him to put his passion project on ice for good. The sole proprietorship under which he ran his business was erased from the registers in the 1940s, but that seems to have been due to state administrational housekeeping of sorts, and might have been defunct before that. I did find a clipping of a certain N.O. Foss thanking people for all the congratulations on his 80th birthday in 1943 in a newspaper in a completely different part of the country. I mean, it's plausible that this is the same guy. In that case, did negative publicity cause him to uproot from the home fjord of the entire human race? Or is this a completely different guy altogether? Some evidence seems to kind of suggest the latter, so this may well remain a mystery unless we can smoke out some locals who have heard something via their grandparents or great-great-grandparents at this point. Naturally, I will do whatever it takes to lay my eyes on either edition of this most obscure piece of Norwegian occulture. And in the interest of keeping this episode short and snappy, I'm not going to get into all of the tangents that I wanted to get into, but I will at least mention them. One is the emphasis that Mr. Foss puts on the Church of St. Thomas on Filefjell, which as a medieval church site is interesting because it's really in the middle of fucking nowhere. So it is difficult to imagine who it was built for. It has many legends attached to it, and it's assumed that it was more a seasonal church site for people who had their livelihoods up in the high mountains, and not really a permanent one. Norway is not like on the continent where villages pop up around churches. People lived scattered around, and you either have a church close to you or you don't. And this also had an impact on pre-industrial church attendance. We hear extreme cases of children who are able to walk by the time that they are baptized, for example. So if you're looking at Scandinavia and the wider Nordic area through the lens of the Christian infrastructure that you might be familiar with on the continent, then in Scandinavia you're going to see exceptions wherever you look. And I'm not a church historian, but that's certainly how it looks to me. Anyway, the Church of St. Thomas on Filefjell is central to a book called The Norske Pentagram, or The Norwegian Pentagram, which posits a geomantic theory that all of the significant church sites in medieval Norway were placed in a pentagram formation, and the Church of St. Thomas is in the very center of that pentagram. To put it quite lightly, this is a very high-effort piece of historical revisionism. A lot of energy went into writing that book, and it's not something that I have any motivation to tackle anytime soon. Though it formed the core of this idea that me and a friend had at some point to write the radio play, in which every conspiracy theory about Norway was somehow true in overlapping ways, and of course the Norwegian pentagram would be the core of it, as the elite bunkers of our alien overlords would naturally be right under St. Thomas's church on Filefjell. At that point, I had no idea that Foss's treatise existed. Secondly, this might be the very first, as far as I know, Norwegian piece of UFO literature that's also absurdly anti-Semitic. And it's curious because Norway has never ever had a very significant Jewish population, at least not compared to other countries. So it feels very out of character in many regards. It certainly makes me think that Orlando Foss probably picked this up in the United States, where he obviously wrote and published the original pamphlet. Thirdly, and I guess this is quite superficial, the other piece of anti-Semitic UFO literature that I can recall from Norway at the time, at the very least pre-Varg Vikernes, is a novel released in 1943. It's a National Socialist science fiction novel called Revolution in Bergen, or Revolution in Bergen, obviously. Horrendously written, but not without memorable passages. Forget about Nazi UFOs. This one has Bolshevik UFOs that fly in Star of David formations. And if I'm not mistaken, in the book, there's a passage where one of the UFOs almost kills the Norwegian archaeologist Håkon Sjetelig, who was an important participant in the excavations of the Oseberg ship, among other things. But finally, this also reminds me of another crackpot revisionist theory from the same area, namely the idea that Christopher Columbus actually came from Sunnfjord in Sogn og Fjordane, which is right north of where this episode took place. And quite insanely, you can visit Sunnfjord and find monuments to the apparent birthplace of Columbus. Anyway, if we include every crackpot in Norway who thinks that their home hamlet is the center of the universe, then we would be here all day. And my patience is wearing thin. So I'm just going to end it right here.
Well, here's a little number we picked up in Snook County, Iowa. It's called Scandinavian Polka. Kick out the longships, the raid has begun. Ha 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 ha, the Scandinavian polka. Pick up your victim and join in the fun. The Scandinavian polka. It started in England, it's now number one. It's bound to kill for mania. Everybody's got a mania to do the polka from Scandinavia. While we're sailing, everybody's silver's quickly gone. Senseless slayings, this goes on and on until the dawn. We're so carefree.
Yes, we are.
Gay with laughter, happy as can be. We stop to have a meat skull, the monks begin to bleed. They kiss, and then they start to raid again. Fire up the cloisters, the gang has begun. The Scandinavian polka. It's fire up your wenches and join in the fun. The Scandinavian polka. It started in England, it's now number one. It's bound to kill more mania. Everybody's got the mania to do the polka from Scandinavia.
Was Piss Elf with Scandinavia Polka from their hit single Live in Delft. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Brute Norse Podcast. If you like this show, or anything else I do, then please share it with like-minded people. That is truly the only way someone like me gets around. That's the most important part. And secondly, if you absolutely want to, you can support me on Patreon, in which case you'll be officially part of the Scandi Futurist Conspiracy, as you'll be granted access to the chat community called the Scandi Futurist Power Walking Club. Or you can check out the links below and buy yourself a Hawaiian shirt of Scandi Futurist design. Or perhaps purchase one of my books or zines. As many of you know, I have this publishing venture going on called Trollcat Press, where I focus on stuff that isn't really attainable to people who don't read Scandinavian languages. In the coming month, I am releasing a new old book called The Norwegian Superstition, which is a translation of a short treatise on Norwegian folklore from the mid-17th century, along with some later editions, and an essay by myself, where I try to highlight how and why Norwegian peasant society was maybe a little different than you might imagine. and why information about the pre-industrial peasantry of Scandinavia might help us understand better their ancestors in the Middle Ages and even the Viking Age, as well as its relevance to Norwegian identity today. Besides any of that shit, Norwegian peasant society is worth a gander in its own right. Alright, without further ado, I'm just gonna say goodnight, coal biters. Keep on keeping on, and keep on walking backwards into the future.